Hey, Gundam Maniacs. Welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. This is going to be a fun one. And, you know, always just in case everything looks live and beautiful, technical difficulties, but you guys wouldn't know except that I brought it up. So now you guys know.
That's part of the lore. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, what's that, Steven?
It's part of the lore of this channel is technical difficulties.
Yeah, it's like the background world building information.
There you go. Which is relevant to tonight's topic, I hope.
It is actually the world building, the Gundam Explained, Midnight Hatter, Free Speech Geek kind of like MCU cinematic universe going on. Because today,
nice. I like this crossover. Yeah,
along with Steven, we've got Kyle. What's up, man?
How's it going, everyone? How are you guys?
Yeah, good to see you. Because you're normally, you know, you've been on our shows, but like you're in the chat a lot, helping provide. Context when we're getting something wrong, you know.
And I love every time you get the three of us together. It's like we kind of have to shut the show down. It's like, yo, bar's closing. Everybody get out. Like these guys are going to talk all night.
I know. Sure. It's going to be good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this one, it is a special episode because it was like a week or so ago, you know, Kyle posted something that made a lot of sense to me. And it had to do with like Gundam or Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. Like right now, and we'll get into it. It's kind of weird how Star Wars is. And then, you know, Gundam is like, for me, is another opportunity to get into that sort of fandom and enjoy it. So we'll dive more into that shortly. But first of all, Kyle.
Yes.
Because I know you've been into a lot of Gundam stuff this week. What have you been doing this week other than dental appointment?
This week, yeah, besides getting a tooth pulled out, that was painful. Besides that, I've been working on a lot of Gundam videos. If you check out my channel, Simply New Type, we recently released we're kind of like halfway through Char's Deleted Affair. We're rounding out Double Zeta. We're coming to a conclusion on that soon. So that's exciting. And we recently just started going back to, Gundam Origin and Zeta Define and kind of doing like compare and contrast videos from the manga and the anime. So that's kind of interesting. That's what we've been working on over there.
I love the comparison between like Zeta Define and you know, what we call canon Zeta or,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Or maybe Define is the canon Zeta.
That's what I wanted. Yeah. I don't know.
There's some early stuff with Camille that's interesting, you know,
in Define. Yeah, definitely.
It's one of those things, like, can you like one over the other? And does that matter?
I don't think it matters, personally. Right. But you definitely can like one over the other.
yeah.
And that definitely sparks some heated conversations in the comment section.
Oh yeah.
But that's what we're here for. Like,
yes. Yes, no, just bread and butter, everyone. Yes, no, I have a friend. I was going to say, I have a friend. He has an X-Men podcast as well. He hates Dupe, everything Dupe. So if I have an opportunity to mention Dupe and bring his name into the fold, I will take that opportunity.
Okay, so I don't know that character.
Dupe is, what is Dupe? If you had to explain Dupe, he's just the X-Men version of
Slimer.
Yeah, he's kind of like a mascot. He vomits rainbows. He's very. Yeah.
I was thinking Dupe like Multiplicity splitting up like that Splinter guy in The Boys. That's what I was thinking.
But which Multiple Man is my favorite X-Men character. I have a tattoo of Multiple Man's logo on my shoulder. And like, so when I saw Splinter in The Boys, I was like, yes, Multiple Man representation.
I don't know if I wanted to see what I saw.
Go ahead. I
interrupted. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I don't know if I wanted to see what I saw.
There's some concept art. There's some concept art going around right now of George Glenn from It's Always Sunny as Multiple Man. It looks crazy. Yeah.
Glenn Howerton?
What did I say? Yeah, Glenn Howerton.
Okay.
I think he could probably pull it off. He has some range as far as
What I was about to say. Like, I think he could pull off a lot. I think he's being underutilized in general. Just to be able to play a psychopath in It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
I know. Oh.
But, no one ever remembers. It's all. What is he? What was in the? Oh, that 80s show. He was the main character in that 80s show.
That 80s show failed.
Spinoff.
Yeah, didn't watch it. Heard of it.
Yeah, right. You know, it's interesting, like the way that the Sunny cast kind of went their different ways, and then they kind of nothing really landed for them apart from, I guess you could argue, Rob McElhenney partnering up with Ryan Reynolds, like that was a big success.
Sure. Yeah. What's his name? Charlie was in those monster movies. He had a moment.
He was a flash in someone's pan for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, not too much. Yeah, I would like to see them do
it's something. A talented bunch, you know, like they're. I think each one of them brings something unique to the table. So
I know it's a perfect blend of creatives to make that show. Like watching some behind the scenes of like. How it even got started.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of sense. So another thing, and it's going to happen as soon as this show is over, but that's when the Elden Ring DLC will be out. It's literally 5 central. So, but unfortunately on PC, and this is just for PC consoles later, but PC, you still have to like download it. So I guess I won't be playing it right away, but I'm excited about Elden Ring. Kyle, you said you haven't been playing things recently, so
I've been playing. It goes on the list of things that I'll eventually get to, maybe soon. Right.
Discounted further down the line. I mean, dude, I still haven't played Elden Ring, so like, don't. That's not a.
Yeah.
No, I'm not in any rush.
I'm just excited. Like, hey, you know, the Nintendo Direct, they announced like a new Zelda game. My wife and I will probably play that. Basically, my gaming is. What can I trick my wife into playing with me?
Okay. Yeah.
And good. You know what really worked? The Disney Illusion Island on the Switch. Because it's just a Metroidvania with no combat.
Okay.
It's interesting. Oh, another thing. Especially, Steven, I want you to play it. But on the Switch, Dead Cells is only $12.
Oh, shoot.
Because that, you know, that company's doing a lot of the modern 2D roguelike stuff.
Well, 2.5D, because Dead Cells is technically 3D, but
that's
it's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should check it out. I think that's
cool.
Speaking of other gaming stuff, real quick before we get into the topic, is to celebrate Elden Ring, I bought the SH Figure Arts action figure.
Nice.
You know, you spend the money on SH Figure Arts, then you get it in hand, and it's like, did I really spend that much? It's one of those things.
Oh.
But something that I didn't think of that for is this Evil Ryu that I got. Love it. And it's not SH Figure Arts. It's Jada Toys,
which makes
really good, cheaper figures. So, okay.
I'm excited to have Marvel vs. Capcom again.
Yeah.
Like, on a modern console.
That was with Jada Toys.
It's not going to be on Xbox Series or PS5. Because apparently the engine is not portable to those. So like basically the PlayStation version that's coming out is a PS4 version. And then there's not going to be an Xbox version. And then there's the Switch version. That's interesting because to me that seems more like, hey, how can we make some money real quick since X-Men is back? Because they're not taking their time to port it everywhere, you know? That's kind of weird.
Yeah. But,
all right. Well, let's talk more about quick cash, poor decision making. No, really, but
great segue.
Great segue. But this has to do with Star Wars, and I think I bring it up here a lot because, like, I used to love Star Wars so much, and I still do to a degree. And I just think it's been lately, coincidentally, because of Disney. But I try not to make it because it's that it's like there's something odd here. Why don't I like this? And sometimes it's hard to figure it out. But The Acolyte just came out, 4 episodes in. And it's a thing again. Okay, a new show comes out. How are people going to be online? And it reminds me of like when Andor came out and how that was more of a general like positive. There's some people like that's too dark for me or that's too, tonally serious for me. But most people enjoyed.
Right.
Acolyte, it's interesting. So there's this thing I've learned, especially with video games and in Gundam. When you hear the noise online, some of it you don't need to pay attention to. So, like, with the conversation around Acolyte, there's the complaints about it being bad. But when it's like, oh, it's a lesbian couple. Oh, why is that a girl? Like, that's okay. I don't think those are really valid complaints.
You're kind of missing the point.
Yeah. And then so it's like, well, let's look deeper. Okay. Because, like, well, if it was written good, It wouldn't matter who the characters were or what they were. You know what I mean? Sure. And that's the other thing. Sometimes it's that forced like DEI, which in my opinion, that's more of a creative decision. If someone's getting some consulting that says, well, this should be a woman, you know, or person of color, like maybe that's a creative decision that works.
Right.
But were it, then you dive more deep into that. You look, how is it written? What were you gonna say, Stephen? I think it was cutting you off.
No, not at all. I like, honestly, you address something that's very prevalent in a lot of modern media, especially with established IPs. Like, I recently watched, you know, a making of Battlestar Galactica, the remake, right? And famously, they gender swapped Starbuck, a character mm-hmm. that in the 70s was a male, and in the, you know, Sci-Fi Channel remake was a female. And it was met with a little bit of backlash, but honestly, I think that was one of those decisions to make a character swap that landed really, really well. Like,
I thought it worked. Yeah.
I thought it worked really, really well. Right, Kyle? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, I enjoyed that. I love that that remake series.
I need to watch it.
It's great.
Everyone, you guys that have good taste always bring that up.
It modernized that like shaky cam in like a digital like field. So you get like this really like rough look of ships. You don't ever get like anything too.
Well, it almost looks like a camera is trying to film the ships.
Exactly. Yeah, almost. Yeah. Dude,
that's something that we've talked about before. Like when it comes to a lot of like these CGI based movies and TV shows where you have these camera shots that would otherwise be impossible if it were not for the fact that the camera is artificial.
Yeah.
And a lot of what makes really good CGI is basically pretending that the camera is a physical camera in space and like, no, we can't whip it around like 325 degrees to do this thing. It's like, no, there's, you know, Godzilla's there. And so we just have to pan up a little bit, you know, those are the things that it's not, you know, to your point, it's not like DEI decisions. It's really like arts and crafts decisions that make those differences.
I mean, because really,
am I kind of like touching on what you're saying?
Yeah, because like, again, like in a show, it almost doesn't matter who a character is in terms of their race, gender, who they like, who they don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, none of that really. That's more of just more interesting character information for the world that they're in, right? And so that's why I think with Acolyte, it's very easy to see. Okay, this has. In fact, I think the casting is great in the Acolyte. To be honest, I think all of those characters are really cool. Even the X-23, the Wolverine daughter character from Logan, has a character in this, and it's really cool. Like the way she comes off as like a younger, but
the guy from Squid Games learned English for this role.
Yeah, and he does great. So that's the thing. This show does a good job with production of how it looks, the camera, the characters, the acting. But for me, where, you know, I started being like, okay, they're doing this again, is just some logic leaps sometimes where I think as a story, they're like, okay, we want this to happen because that would be cool for Star Wars. Right. We also want this to happen because that would be cool for Star Wars. How do we make them connect? I don't know. We can just make it where then the character just disappears or we don't have to explain it. We'll just, and so those little things, they pop up too much to where it seems like the focus on this story was how can we put Star Wars stuff in a mystery murder, not let's tell a good murder mystery story, which even then the murder mystery aspect goes away pretty quick. Then it's like, okay, then what is this show?
Okay.
Like,
can I ask you guys, have either of you seen the movie Throw Mama from the Train from the 80s? Billy Crystal?
A long time ago. Yeah.
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 Billy Crystal and Danny DeVito. If you guys in the audience, if you have not seen it, go watch Throw Mama from the Train. There is a scene in which, so Billy Crystal plays a writing teacher, like creative writing teacher, and Danny DeVito is one of his students. And he's asking him why he didn't like his story. And he goes, Owen, you wrote a murder mystery that was 2 pages long. It's only got 2 characters in it. there was no mystery who the murderer was. Like, he's like, oh yeah, one guy in a hat killed another guy in a hat. That's the murderer mystery. And he's like, there's no motive. Like, there's nothing. So every time one of these stories comes up, whether it's in Star Wars or whether it's in other media, I'm always reminded of the characters from Throw Mama from the Train, where they write these very contrived stories that there's no mystery to it. Like you said, it's like, you know, you wrote
an idea there, but there's nothing something that makes it a story.
Yeah. You didn't do the extra work in between.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of, people were told in the writing classes, just common thing for a certain generation is to have your ending done first before and work backwards. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing a lot of that in a lazy kind of form. You get this, like you said, you have this point A, you have this point B, right? And you got to get me there in an effective way. And right. If you can't get, you got to make it natural and within the world, which a lot of the world feels very sanitized to me. It feels very, everyone looks super sexy, which I don't know. That threw me off for Star Wars. I was like, man, everyone looks nice. What's going on?
That's true. That's what part of it. Like,
no grime or anything like that, you know? And these, like, just these small kind of moments. For me, a lot of the conversations, everyone was at a neutral thing, and it felt like ASMR, and I was just falling asleep, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone was just talking at this kind of neutral. I think that was the point, kind of like the stoic approach, but stoicism sucks visually.
It doesn't make good storytelling, though.
No one wants to see that for the most part. And yeah, I'm seeing, that was my biggest concern. It's just like, I was zoning out a lot. I was just like, get me, let's get there. Let's get to the point. I want to know people's intentions and motives a little, like, I feel like we're beating around the bush.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when, a Jedi will be killed off. They don't really do anything for you to feel something for that character for once they're killed off. It's almost like they just want to show, hey, here's some Jedi being killed off. Yeah, we'll have a Wookiee Jedi, but he's not going to do anything. The first time we have a Wookiee Jedi in Star Wars, he's not going to do anything. It's like all these little things like that where, it's like they had this idea. They throw the Star Wars stuff in it, but they don't make it make sense.
Yeah. You know?
So
does seem like people want to make something that isn't Star Wars, which I want to see more different things. Make a new thing.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's the problem. We're stuck in IPs.
Yeah. That's the thing with that. Like, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, if you're going to make something that dives back into Jedi and stuff like that, I would think then, okay, this is something that will then connect like strictly to what we've seen. Otherwise, why are we just going through, like, something I said on here before is like, it would be a cool story if there's some planet where the people built mechs to do the work around the planet. Like, that's what they came up with. And then the Empire comes to try to take over, and then they start utilizing their mechs, you know. So, like, it's a way to have a Star Wars story, but it doesn't have to be about the same tropey stuff.
Yeah.
Introduce something different. Well, so what I was going to ask is, like, Kyle, because yesterday over on my show, we talked about the new season of The Boys, right?
Right.
And how there's this new character that is the smartest person alive, right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that type of writing is what's going on in something like The Acolyte or something like Star Wars, where it's like people are writing these stories where people have to be in the right place at the right time in order for the right thing to happen for the story to continue the way that they want it to be?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want to hear you.
I mean, everything feels like a Rube Goldberg machine instead of an actually natural lived in world that people could, things happen and whatnot. But yeah, I get that point when it comes to the smartest person in the world. I wouldn't want to ever do that trope, right? That's dangerous territory in general. Have you watched the fourth episode yet? The Boys?
Oh, The Boys.
The fourth one out?
Yeah, it came out today. They address a way, I guess, to explain, like, she hates being smart, and it's, like, just an annoyance. So she does something to prevent that, almost like a drug, but it heals.
Okay.
But it heals, so she makes herself kind of dumb. And she has a way to do that. It's like her drug of just, like, I need to be dumb. I don't want to have to deal with all the dumb people around me. Let me just
so that I can be on their level.
Well, that's interesting because that's a recurring theme with.
Isn't that something that you and I talked about, Adam, yesterday? Where I was like, "Hey, isn't it nice how like Iron Man is the smartest guy alive, but he drinks himself and he's got his ego? Like, there are things that he does to limit his intellect so that he's not always the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, and
can understand why he makes incorrect decisions sometimes."
Yeah, just so the moment to moment's not like a coincidence. Like, oh, he's super smart, so of course he's going to solve this. It has to be those things. And interesting because even in The Acolyte, they do I hate it when Star Wars does this, and it doesn't do it too often. And they've explained it in Empire, but when they had to go, you know, make sure the one Jedi didn't get murdered, so they go to that planet at the same time as when the murderer goes to the planet. Like, we're talking about going across the galaxy and they happen to meet at the same time. Like, those types of things, it makes me think, okay, well, did they plan this ahead? Were they all planning to be there at the same time? In Empire Strikes Back, they explained how it took Luke months to get to Bespin after training in Dagobah. So and they were just, his friends were there waiting for him. But it's different when you have two groups meeting somewhere. And then even The Last Jedi, when they were stuck like in the Fury Road sort of space train, but yet one of them like leaves in an escape pod to go do something. And then another one, it's like, wait, what? Like, it's those types of story things. There's things about The Acolyte that just remind me too of like the Book of Boba Fett, like, which that shit was a waste. The story of Boba Fett, and that's what you do? my main thing was, I think the Boba Fett story should be about him trying to find his brothers. How many is that? I don't know. But I feel like that would be a more interesting thing for Boba Fett to be doing that next, is the fact that he wasn't chosen. Like, he wasn't, you know, he was forced to be born, basically a clone of his dad. And then he has all of these brothers out there. What are they doing? Are they, like, I would feel like there would be some human element.
Technically, he's older than them.
Yeah. And that's because
even though they were artificially aged up, that were, remember, in aging. The Camino, they said, like, oh, we made a pure clone that isn't like artificially enhanced. So.
Yeah. So I think, anyway, so basically what I'm trying to say is, I think it's pretty obvious by now that Disney is sort of like just. It's like, what's a cool Star Wars thing? Okay, and then let's find someone to just write how that works. You know, not really thinking through it. But Gundam, on the other hand, and I think the easiest way to bring up how deliberate they are is the thing you brought to my attention, Stephen, I've never thought about, was where when they're animating something, they have to really sit there and think about what they're animating because they have to take time doing it, which I think inherently makes it where the storytellers or script writers are really having to think about the story frame by frame. You know, not to like have anything in it that doesn't make sense for the story, you know?
And before we dive into the topic improper, I do want to address something like, so speaking on what you were saying in your tweet, Kyle, is like, I know I do not, let me see if I can articulate this correctly. I do not know a single Star Wars fan that doesn't like Gundam. I know lots of Gundam fans that don't like Star Wars for whatever reason, but I've never met a single Star Wars fan that has encountered Gundam and been like, yeah, that's not for me.
Right. And even when I've talked to people that are really into Star Wars, but haven't gotten to Gundam, they're like, yeah, I keep being told this. Yeah, I heard. Yeah, I would like that. Especially when it comes to, you know, the weaponry, the battles, the sides, the politics of that. That's which I think Gundam does better, even though I wouldn't have known that as a kid, you know, watching Star Wars, like as a kid, if I'm watching Star Wars and Gundam, I might not notice what Gundam is doing that is better than what Star Wars is doing.
I think that a modern day Star Wars could learn a lot from Gundam in the terms that you got to think that, like, if you look at the old original Star Wars, it was broad strokes, good versus evil. And it seems modern Star Wars wants to get into the nuance of it. They want to get into the gray areas, more gray Jedi stuff and whatnot. Gundam's a good example of that, and like it's the nuance between two different factions in which not one or two are necessarily good or evil. And most of the time, everything is pretty messed up. And I think, yeah, a lot of Gundam, or a lot of Star Wars fans would enjoy, and I think a lot of Star Wars writers and the people over at Disney could benefit from looking at a franchise like Gundam, right? That is dealing with this nuance. An internal conflict, right? That's what they want to deal with, an internal conflict. That's also my big gripe with Star Trek, if you're into Star Trek, is like, it's all about like an idealized version. We're not fighting with each other anymore. Modern day Star Trek, right. They're always trying to create conflict now.
That is an excellent, that is an excellent point.
But yeah, we see that in Gundam, right? We see a point of view from a certain character, certain grunts, certain officers, their intentions, their motives. Some people are motivated by money. Some people are motivated by power. A lot of the time it's power. And they all have a certain, usually not always, something that they're fighting for that is ultimately seen as a good thing, at least in their eyes.
Well, ideals.
Yeah, my ideas. Yes, exactly. My ideas.
And that's interesting because in A New Hope, we get the character of Luke where he just wants to fight. Like, and even at the beginning, he was wanting to join the Empire. It's like he doesn't know. He just wants to get off the farm and go fight. Yeah. And what I like about Amuro is we get someone like Luke is thrust in a situation that he didn't plan to be in, but we're seeing Amuro try to deal with it where there's trauma along the way. Luke sees his aunt and uncle burnt. He's like, now I want to fight. And then, you know, he goes and fights. We have Amuro kills his first person. He's freaking out and he doesn't want to fight anymore. And then they're trying to force him to fight because he's the only one that can, but he doesn't want to be the only one that can. Like, it's a really neat sort of story there. But then we get the antagonist Char, where he shows up, seems like a badass, but then we don't see him for a while. And then he comes back and then we get more information about like his backstory. Like now he's trying to take out other members of the Zeon also. Mm-hmm. So it's like, again, a complex character that has this internal struggle that's bigger than the world. Yeah, there's the world going on, Zeon versus Federation, but within it are even Amuro and Char, it seems more like they don't want to have to face each other, but they just kind of have to since they're the most powerful and they're on both of ends of this with Lala in the middle. You know,
it's kind of prequel vibes, right? Like if we're talking in Star Wars terms, like the prequels have a very heavy level of nuance and politique involved where it's like, oh, you know, Senator Palpatine is trying to oust the Chancellor so that he can take power, but you know, then Count Dooku is playing double agent and also trying to raise a droid army, but we're only doing that as like a false flag in order to make them have a clone army. It's like, there's a lot going on there that I think gets kind of overlooked in the criticisms of the prequels. Right.
Right. Cause sometimes, and it's funny, and it's the reason why I appreciate George Lucas, cause the way he filmed the prequels looks odd, but it's because he's mirroring a specific style, and that's pretty neat because then if you watch the prequels today, they still have their own look, which I think is going to help it in the future. But the other thing too about the politics, I remember watching it when it came out and I didn't really care too much. In fact, I was like, well, the other Star Wars didn't do that, you know, I just want to see the, but then over time I'm like, wow, George Lucas really thought about the world, how it works. So then by the time we get the sequel trilogy, you know, and I can understand kind of reeling that back for an audience, but Gundam, you see Universal Century Gundam keeps those dark themes going. They don't stop while also having, you know, plastic to sell to, you know what I mean? So it's like, I think they get it where, and you've brought it up before, Steven, how like younger kids really look up to some of these themes that happen in shows. It's like not pandering to a kid. It's showing adult situations and kids want to watch that. So the other thing too is like the Death Star. So we get Luke, and I brought this up many times. Luke blows up the Death Star and they're celebrating afterwards. But Amuro just kills one person, you know, and he's devastated. He's like, I don't want to have to kill people. Like, I think it really explores, like, I like to watch Gundam and Star Wars for the action. Action means people are going to die. Mm-hmm. But if I want to earn that action, I want it to be in some context that I feel for these characters. And Gundam does that excellently. And I think Star Wars didn't need to do that. Or if it did, it did it right in its kind of fantasy heroic way. But I think that the sequel or the Disney era stuff has almost kind of made it where it's not impactful, because the idea is to kind of subdue the death in a way, you know.
Well, both of them are space operas, right? Like they're not technically hard sci-fi.
I think
Kyle, you could probably touch on this better than I could. Like the difference between like a fantasy sci-fi and like a hard sci-fi. Both Gundam and Star Wars, in my opinion, kind of fall more in that space opera fantasy sci-fi, right?
I would agree. Yeah, it's definitely so. People always get like Dune; they call it a hard sci-fi, but Dune is actually revolutionized the soft sci-fi. It's all about the internal conflict. It wasn't really about the science at all. But in terms of like, wait, where was I going with this? Okay, yeah, okay. So,
I'm glad that you brought up Dune though, because that's a very important distinction that people kind of miss.
But yeah, that's one thing that like when you look at the original Star Wars, there were space wizards. You know, it wasn't really. It was again like I go back to broad strokes. You know, high concept. It wasn't really about the world or even seeing it as a religion at that point. It was just kind of more closer to a fantasy than a science fiction at that point. We get a little bit more science fiction in Gundam, of course. All the influences based off of NASA's space colonies and stuff like that. So there is some influence in real science there. But ultimately, the new type aspect is very, very much that 70s space wizard feel. It's not a religion. It's not something more in the world. They're space wizards. We've built on that since then, right? Yeah, but at the time, it was just that. There was not too much more to it. We get into with Zeta with the whole like kind of autistic kind of like route and like people like kind of growing and evolving and stuff like that. And once we get to 90 UC 96 with Laplace's box, where we go like, if humans evolve to this, we get certain rights. You know, this all grew from just the basic concept of space wizards, which I think is fine. You know, you don't have to have this great grand thing. You could start small and then build, you know?
Yeah. And that's a good point, because with Gundam, and that's the other similarity with Gundam and Star Wars, is the Force and a new type. It's kind of the same thing, where humans are capable, or anyone in case of Star Wars is capable of maybe doing more. And a lot of it has to do with concentration, focus, your mind. And I liked a lot, like, in as I got older and I learned a lot of that Eastern philosophy that George Lucas would inject into the Force stuff. And I really gelled with it. I really liked that. But then on the other side with the new types, that leans more science fiction, because a lot of what they talk about the minds could do. And I even did a video on this. You can like jump into brain science and see where, well, if this was going to happen in Gundam, it would be because of this. And a lot of times brain waves are what's brought up all the time. Oh, interfacing with brain waves. And then a lot of though what's happening internally is emotion driven. And, you know, that's something that a lot of times it's individual in real life to a person. What people go through, traumatic experiences, near-death experiences, how do you portray something that everyone would get, you know? And so that's where it almost seems a little goofy in Gundam, because it's not explained exactly that there's Jedis or something. It's just some people can do this. But the visuals that they use in Gundam to make it goofier than in Star Wars, in my opinion, is really there to try to, how would you interpret what you're feeling inside your head?
Right. How do you manifest that
physically?
Yeah. And they call it out specifically. Like, I mean, you know, you think about Scirocco saying like, oh, these people are fighting with such naked emotions. It's you know, pressure. There's definitely something there that they are specifically trying to call out deliberately.
Yeah. So I think that's a cool element that's similar in Star Wars and Gundam, but Gundam does it different enough to where it is more interesting. I think it takes that next step, you know, like you were saying, Kyle, like it, yeah, and it has the more science fiction-y approach.
And it takes the foundation, you know, of it is ultimately empathy, right? They're just hyper empathetic beings that could sense someone else's feelings in a psychic way, you know, or some type of brainwave, metaphysical way. Now, you know,
new types are Jedi, because I would argue that like a lot of the serenity and peace that Jedi experience is because of empathy that they're experiencing being part of like that one universal body. So maybe new type theory isn't necessarily like, oh, well, we're all part of this force that flows through us and binds us and ties us together. But there's that same language there about empathy and compassion that you see in new types, right?
Yeah, and in narrative, there's even a part, I think Rita specifically says, you know, when you die, you just go back to the whole thing. Like, and then it's through that, I guess. So yeah, it speaks on science in terms of near-death experiences. What, you know, not that we have this stuff answered, but what a lot of people kind of agree upon in that sort of metaphysical science aspect, you know? And it's interesting how, Gundam and Star Wars do it the same, but it's different on the surface, but still relatable. So that's another aspect that for someone that is looking to get into Gundam, you know, it does the force thing, but I think it does it in a more science fiction manner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other thing too, you know, that's a real big deal with Star Wars fans and, you know, Gundam is like the weapons, like what's the thing, right? In Star Wars, it's the ships. And, you know, I wonder, you hear Star Wars, the special effects are ships.
Kyle and I are both like, lightsabers. I think it's the lightsaber. I'm gonna go with the,
it's probably more,
But I'm looking at it from like, if you're looking at Star Wars for the first time, you see, oh, there's a movie Star Wars coming out. Wow, it has amazing special effects of the ships, you know, because that was like the first time they were able to do, you know, ship combat look that way. And it's interesting because then if you see where Star Wars goes further down, it becomes more about, the lightsabers and the... Mm-hmm. So it's like, for me, I prefer the combat weaponry stuff, but... Like with Gundam and the new types, I think the force aspect, even being in as little as it was in the original, added a more interesting dynamic to what would be hard sci-fi, like we just talked about. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you guys agree. Now it's like when people think Star Wars, it's like lightsabers and force powers, which I think I know I'm saying a lot here. Gundam is confusing to get into, but... With Star Wars, I see it, people are usually into the ships and the battles, or they're into the Jedi stuff. But does Gundam have that? Other than, I like UC or I like AU. Does UC have
people love the Gunpla, and they're like they're into their particular mobile suit? You know, people. It seems like the fan base gets into. They find their thing, and they're like, this is my thing. This is mine now.
Okay, I like get that.
Away from my thing.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, because when I got into Gundam. You know, it was like, oh, the one with the V-fin is the popular one. And then I, you know, from there, it was like the Granddaddy, the Mark II. And so it's like, oh, I like this. And because if anyone is going to watch a Gundam show, even if it's a new Gundam show, you're looking at the mech design. Sure. I mean, is anyone going to watch a new Gundam show to be like, okay, like not care about the mech design? But it does a good job with the... They have the similar like narratives in terms of like war is bad. Sure. Maybe people like that.
Sure.
One thing, do they still make, remember back in the day, they used to make those old Star Wars technical manuals where they do like the vivisection of the ships and they show the breakdown of everything. I love those back in the day.
That's funny. I still have.
What's the meme about Count Dooku's like aristocratic stare or something?
That's like a stance that he has like a,
He looks like he's on a green screen, doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Yeah.
There's something like that. Yeah. If someone in the chat remembers. But there was a time too on StarWars.com in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like if you scroll down to the bottom, it, each page would randomly have like a blueprint of a vehicle, and then you can just print it out. So I would print them out, and I had like a whole stack of them.
That was the only thing I would get at the you know, the Scholastic book fairs, right?
Oh yeah, the Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of that in Gundam that people can't get into. That little tiny thing that like everyone, like I'm a big fan of just like WAPAs, you know, the little hovercrafts. Those things are cool.
Yeah.
And like I want to see more like little things like that. You know, the what's the giant bazooka that like it's like a 4-man team. You get 4 people on it. EFF uses it. It's a bazooka. It's anti. Like little things like that, that's really cool, like boots on the ground type of things that especially cosplayers get into. I think they could form their own like little squads and hang out in cons.
That's something stuff that like Star Wars has an advantage over over Gundam in, right? Like cosplaying Star Wars is a lot easier than cosplaying Gundam because you can just throw a robe on and carry a lightsaber.
That's a good point.
So Kyle, what would you say, in your opinion, comparing like the world building, because we're talking a lot about like, you know, the in-universe stuff, the world building in Gundam, like you said, is a little bit harder sci-fi than what you see in Star Wars. Do you think that that is better objectively than Star Wars, or do you think that they're comparable? What, like, how would,
I think,
how would
you like kind of I think Gundam suffers from the same thing as Marvel, is just where do I start?
Yeah,
you know where to start with Star Wars, just Star Wars, you know, A New Hope, A New Hope, I guess it's called now, but you watch those 3 movies and you watch just watch them in release order. I guess that's the best approach to Gundam too, is watch everything in release order. That's a good point. But I feel like people struggle with an entry point to Gundam, and I don't know how to answer that for everyone. It's always different, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, something I think I came across recently, I forgot if we were talking about it here, but that War in the Pocket would be a good one to start with. Because are you someone that, you know, would want to listen to characters do character building? But you're still going to get the world building. You know, it's that one thing where the character sort of building is happening with the world building, and then you get your battles. And really good animation. So that's another thing, animation. I think it's harder if someone's into Star Wars, into live action, to get into Japanese anime. Like, straight up, right? Like, I know I was closed-minded for a while about that, and I still come across that a lot where people are like, "Well, that's not a cartoon." it's that whole thing. It's a cartoon. Are you watching your cartoons? It's like, it's one of those things where I feel like that's, until the live action Gundam movie comes out, that's always going to be a barrier.
Yeah.
You mean G Savior, right?
There you go.
We already had a live. No, I know what you mean.
Ian actually just posted us to argue. Oh, MS Team is a good spot to start. 12 episodes and very grounded. War in the Pocket has some more intense themes, in my opinion. Yeah,
happy ending too. Most are downers. So
yeah, the thing about 08 MS Team is I think it's hard to recommend that to someone that doesn't like anime in the first place. Because I can't stand Shiro's and Ina's characters. When I'm looking at them, I feel like I'm watching The Simpsons while watching Gundam. You know, it's like I can't get over their designs in the world they're in. Because, like, Sanders is drawn great. You know, because they have the thing where their noses are just, like, weird. Or sometimes they don't even have noses.
Basic characters. Generic, typical, like, your leads, you know, not...
Well, I will say, though,
they make them very soft featured because it makes them more relatable to anybody who's watching them, and they can kind of insert themselves into that character because it's like, oh, this person doesn't have a nose like this, so then that must be my nose, right?
But it
makes them more attractive.
Look at how Amuro is drawn.
Yeah.
It looks great. Like,
which is funny because, like, Yasuhiko Yoshikazu, he specifically said, like, I want to make like a nerdy guy that has like an afro and not lifts weights and
oh yeah,
I'm intentionally doing the same gesture that Yoshikazu does when he whenever he describes Amuro, he's like, he's not a muscle freak.
Well, that and even up until like even War in the Pocket, I love how they drew the characters. It was really 08MS team seed, you know, where I think the 90s is where they started less definition. You know, it's like, I guess that's what it is. The less definition, the more I relate it to like a kid's, you know, a kid's show or something. Yeah. I know it's the weird one. I always have to bring it up. And that's another thing. I wonder if it's how long I went in my life not watching anime.
Could be. Yeah.
So when I do, and I'm seeing how inconsistent a main character is drawn compared to everyone else, and I'm like, I can't see past it.
Yeah. At least doesn't have a chin that could stab you like Kira.
See,
there you go. Too. Blast with that thing,
right?
But and then, so that's the other thing about the animation too is how I think some people that would be prude or maybe have prude-like intentions would automatically assume anything with an anime girl speaking, you know, is cringy, and you know that's that other thing. And I think I've learn to get over that myself because it's more of like that's just the expression of that art form when it comes to like anime girl characters. They're just very expressive in that, and just like the male counterparts are. It's all the, you know, the details in the animation, I guess. So what I'm trying to say is I think, you know, a lot of Western people, Americans that don't watch anime, when they see stuff like that, they're like, oh, I can't get this. And, you know, I've seen it. There's times where I've had people that I know that live around where I am. I sit them down. Let's watch some Gundam. And they're like, what is this? Why are they drawn like this?
This guy's making me watch anime.
Yeah, I know. Which I'm proud of, by the way. It's like I think about things in life I never thought I'd do. One is watching anime. One is beat Dark Souls. And I did that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good luck getting a neighbor to do that.
Yeah. But well, no, so oh yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask Kyle, like, you know, because you get a lot of with Star Wars, you get a lot of that sort of implied storytelling with something like Han Solo talking about the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's these random nuggets of information that are thrown out in Star Wars that they don't need to be explained, but they kind of like create this like lived in world. Do you feel like there's that same level of attention and care given in Gundam?
I think so. I think in parts, yeah. There's moments where you're all like, there's like five people on white base. How is everyone doing everything? But other than that, it does feel relatively lived in. I mean, the fact that most of the world is like carpet bombed helps.
Oh, no. Carpet bombed is probably putting it lightly, but
yeah, diplomatic. But I do feel like it's a world that they built. Like it's a, you know, we don't see the 1 week war ever in Gundam, right? That we don't see Operation British. We just hear about
talk
it. We get that little prologue sometimes at the beginning. But it's just alluded to. There's this horrible event that killed half of humanity, and this is 1 week, and we're still fighting this war, you know. And we get enough of it to understand at least our characters' motivations going forward, right? I don't think I learned anything about knowing about Han Solo's dice at all.
No. Wow, that's a great point to bring up, the different type of fan stuff to do, like make it meaningful, you know. That's a really good point. But like because I'm trying to figure out the answer here, and this goes back to your tweet, Kyle. Like part of making this channel is to get people like me that didn't know Gundam and that likes that stuff into Gundam,
right?
I mean, what are some other things to do about that? Because I think it's going to take this live action movie.
Yeah.
Really?
It'll help. It certainly helps. Yeah. A certain people will probably enjoy the video games more than the anime. So getting them into that would probably be a good approach.
And let me ask you real quick before your next thought. Do you agree? And this is my thought, and I think Steven's too. They should make a really good Gundam game, not just like a you know, Gundam Breaker or like a multiplayer game, like actually make a AAA, you know, like an Elden Ring.
It's a narrative driven.
Like make a Gundam game that is like a really good game. Yeah, how much do you think that matters? Because X-Men doesn't have any good.
I would love to say, I mean, just in any publisher game developer out there, I would like to see that. It's just not even Gundam. Just can I see more just story driven stuff instead of, you know, these Game Pass driven like type of the models.
Little games,
or you know, any but we're seeing more.
Crush it. Like BioWare, BioWare with KOTOR 1, KOTOR 2, and then the Mass Effect trilogy. Those are solid games.
Yeah, I love those games. The KOTOR games, like all those old school, just single player driven, you know, games that you could just go through. Those were fun. And
the problem nowadays is they're bogged down with like busy work. And so I think that's they're less interesting. They can't focus on the story because it's like, okay, get the map that shows all the icons, everything you do, the collectathon. Have you tried that UC Engage mobile game?
I played a little bit of it. I've been just reading some wiki stuff, but my phone broke not too long ago, so I have like an older phone, and this one can't play it, so I just kind of dropped off.
I actually haven't played it much.
Yeah.
After first playing it, it's all right.
It's what I expected, more or less.
But it has the cool anime stuff.
That's really why I'm there, honestly.
Well, okay, so then I want to end this, or have this like final kind of thought real quick. So like the one thing that is interesting about Gundam is, you know, Sunrise was the company, and then like in the late 80s, early 90s, Bandai came in, and it's been with them ever since. Is it true that it seems like even exchanging hands, Gundam has been treated with a lot of respect compared to what we normally see out of any IP, even Marvel, you know, when it comes to, in my opinion, when it comes to Universal Century, I haven't seen any other IP gone so long, like really just respecting it. Because Hathaway being the movie it was, I did not expect that. And to me, that was amazing. Because it could have just been like a anime mobile suit battle fest where it's just like, here's a bunch of action, you know.
I guess Marvel, right? That's been going on for a while. DC, but there's not too many properties that's been going on since the 60s for this long. I mean, you got like things like Astro Boy remake movies and stuff like that, but that comes once every 20 years. That's not consistent. So that's
An Ultraman movie.
Yeah.
Ultraman and Kamen Rider specifically in the past 10 years have been blowing up. Ooh, like crazy. Yeah.
Huge.
Right. Yeah. I didn't expect that.
Well, it's just interesting because Disney got the Star Wars license in 2012, and I don't think 1 ounce of them, and maybe it is inherent in a corporate structure, is not about the craft. It's about the return. Like, it's like, oh, of course it's about that. But it seems like it's now getting to the point where it's at the detriment. Like, we can see. I mean, is it fair, or is it just me as a fan critiquing Disney to say they've made Star Wars? Not that they've made it worse, but they just haven't made stuff. Yeah, because you can't
prioritize the story. Would you say that's?
Well, I'm trying to say it in a way that almost sounds toxic, but not where like Disney Star Wars is just not as good as George Lucas Star Wars. Is that a fair statement? And I don't know because George Lucas just had the 6 movies, and Disney has produced some good Star Wars stuff.
Sure,
but. It's like with Gundam, you don't ever think that. You're not like, well, the early Gundam was better, like of Universal Century. You know what I mean? Like, you don't.
I mean, it was.
Like Kukuru's Doan's Island. Is there anything Disney Star Wars related that's as good as old Star Wars, like Kukuru's Doan's Island is as good as it is compared to. That's a really weird question. And maybe it's me trying to structure, but you see what I'm saying?
So I like this approach of let's look at it from a business side, right? We got these people, right? Making all this content out there, and they're allowing us as YouTubers to more or less put it all out there at the expense, knowing we're going to buy the toys and we're going to the theme parks. Let's look at Nintendo, who has the same structure, but they care so much about the IP to will. They'll destroy your life.
Yeah.
So I think holding on to the IP itself, at least from business aspect, isn't a good approach. You're just holding on to, like, in terms of Nintendo, games that aren't being published at all right now, not in production at all, and someone makes a video or puts it out there and now you care type of situation. Whereas Disney will be like, yeah, make fun of us. That's free marketing for us. Well, fuck, I don't care. Sure, do yeah, it. Right. I like that approach. In terms of storytelling, it absolutely does hurt the Hollywood production in terms of its bottom line, for sure. It is going to make storytelling worse. Absolutely.
Okay.
But when you're that big, I don't know what else to do. We're at a point where they're too big. We have what, two studios left?
Well, here's the thing. Have you heard the news about the new AT&T?
Like, it's not even.
Well, have you guys heard the news about the new Jurassic movie?
No.
Yeah.
Wait, what's Gareth Edwards?
Low budget.
Low budget.
Okay.
Scarlett Johansson. Nice. Marshala Ali, and cool. And if it's anything like how I think Gareth Edwards went about filming the last movie he did, The Creator, where
that was good.
Yeah, he just went to a cheap location, shot a movie, and then added the CGI later. No green screen. Yes. I mean, maybe there was, but not relying on that. And so I think that's the approach they're going to take with Jurassic Park. This guy made Rogue One. This guy made Godzilla. And even though I think they got a good director for the Gundam movie, he would be a good director for the Gundam movie, just not like
you'd be a good like boots on the ground, like Nathan MS team type of story, or like an Odessa, have him write the Odessa story.
Yeah
That'd be cool,
because that's what Gundam needs to be. It needs to be like a mini series, like Band of Brothers style, like just touching on each of the major battles with like one-hour episode. Like, here's an hour episode about Rombaral, here's an hour episode about Odessa, here's an hour episode about Texas Colony.
And here's the thing, Star Wars should do that. They just need to have a show that is the Star Wars. Hey, give us a show that's a Star Wars. I even made on my other YouTube channel, I made a video that is, or it might be on Blue Gamer, I don't know. I called it Star Wars The Empire, and it's an intro to the show would be just following a crew on a Star Destroyer. Mm-hmm. And then I made it where that episode is called Battle of Mimban. So it would be like seeing that. That would be the episode where you see the troops land on the planet, do their thing. Like, I feel like that's what Star Wars needs to be. Instead, they're trying to be too. Like,
okay, so before we close out, I want to ask you, Kyle, because I know Adam's take on this.
Yeah.
What is your feeling both in Gundam and Star Wars? Because I know that Gundam is they're cavalier about abandoning old characters. Like, they don't feel like everything needs to be tied to Amuro and Char. I feel like in Star Wars IP, they always are trying to look for threads to tie, you know, whatever the current story is to, you know, the prequels or the sequels, whatever the case may be. What's your thought about, like, with the world that has been built in both Star Wars and Gundam, do you prefer having more stories that are told that are disconnected from the core story, or that do have those ties to the existing lore?
You know, in terms of Star Wars at this point, I would say just screw it. Just do your own thing and just stop caring about it. Honestly, at this point, it's already divided. It's already, you already are going to either lose half or gain half, depending on which way you go. Just go all in. In terms of Gundam, I would say it's such a hard approach, because what I like, and I guess what we see people loved, which from Mercury, which I enjoyed, it was a higher to mid tier, you know, I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't anything that stuck with me for the most part. But people love it. People love that story. So maybe it's something I don't understand about storytelling. Maybe I'm not gay enough. Maybe I need to be gayer. I don't know. I could. I just need to just tap into that.
I think
maybe,
they just
maybe did Star Wars was right, actually.
Well, no, I think they just did a good job of implementing just enough for the mainstream.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's yeah. It hits on a lot of like modern storytelling. You get the romance approach, you get the kind of diversity approach, and you get you know that kind of corporate espionage conflict as well.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Mm. That was really cool about it.
Yeah. So my guess would be like stay the course. So that's the thing when it comes to UC content. It's fine. Think of it like a nice Japanese restaurant. You're going to be waiting 3 hours. There's only like 5 seats. It's going to take a while. And that's what like, look at like Thunderbolt. They're like, yeah, we're going to do Thunderbolt. We're going to do more Thunderbolt after Hathaway. So like in 10 years, we'll see it. They have a plan. It's just going to be a while. So they're staying the course. In terms of UC, I think we're fine. It might be a little slow for people's taste, but we're good. Just throwing out more, I think, AUs, you know, certain new things, new ideas that can be kind of explored and expressed through just different AUs, you know. So like one thing I noticed is after Code Geass in like 2000 and when was that, 6-ish, somewhere around there, just I saw Gundam's influence on like the mech influence from Code Geass kind of shift in that kind of direction, and then especially mech before it died for and dropped off for a little bit in terms of anime, but things like that, like little changes, just like I think I mentioned this last time I was on your podcast, like a cell phone. Just having a cell phone in an anime. Like little subtle things that kind of ground us as the viewer, the human viewer, you know, and kind of brings us into their world and or at least kind of helps us relate to their world a little bit better. That's definitely needed for sure. But I don't, in terms of an overall plan, I don't know. Try new things. That's you're never going to get that from the money people, though.
Well, hey, if this live action movie happens, I think that's going to do something. That's what they need, and we're just waiting. So, we'll see anyway, no, that was a good conversation. Dude, but
well said.
I think there's so much more that could be said about the Star Wars thing. We'll probably get to that eventually. But yeah, no, that's it for today's show, everyone. Yeah, thanks for being here, Kyle. Thanks for being here too. We need to do this more often because I think we vibe just right when it comes to all these topics. Yeah. So, we'll do this more often. So, sweet. Anyway, everyone, have a good rest of the day. Catch you later. See y'all.
See ya
later.